Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. I know it gets harder and harder to believe over the last 8 days at this stage. The list of punishment and the methods of punishment inflicted by adults on children in our schools. More today, I wouldn't wear a ponytail because a nun would use the ponytail to lift me off the ground as she bet me. A crucifix was pushed into my mouth. I was beaten by a snooker cue. There's a story about a penknife coming up. Our heads were banged together. We were smashed into the blackboard. Teak rulers were used. Wire cable, we heard that yesterday. A whip, a horsehair whip. Fist, boots and hands, obviously, featured a lot. A tennis ball was stuffed into my mouth because I spoke in class. A tennis ball, an orange was pushed into my mouth continuously by a teacher because I didn't like orange. We'll hear about that. And if you stabbed repeatedly in the head by the business end of a Bic biro, stabbed repeatedly, bamboo rods, dado rails, food deprivation, being made to dress up as a girl, a little boy, being made to dress up as a girl and being paraded around every class in the school to be humiliated, beaten by a rubber hose, a blackthorn stick, fear, banister rods, locked in the cupboard, door slammed on my fingers. The list is just astonishing, and it's real, and it's real people telling the stories. Jerome, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
What happened in your case?
Well, actually, it's one of those things that you mentioned. That's why I was listening to this over the past week, and I was thought I should mentioned this one. It was in when I was in national school. I'm not entirely sure what age I was, but I saw this occur twice.
Okay,
it was being paraded around school dressed as a in girls' clothing.
My God,
that happened to two boys that I'm aware of in the school I was in. There were two schools. There was a boys' school and a girls' school, but they were separate. But if there was something considered really heinous, this was the ultimate punishment. And as I say, two boys were paraded around the school in what would be called a girl's smock.
And what they were made stand in front of a classroom. They were paraded in the girl's smock. And what do you know what would be said, Jerome?
Oh, well, it's hard to remember now, to be honest with you. But I just know that on both occasions, like, the two boys were just bawling, crying.
Just humiliated,
But the thing about it is, Joe, what I always worried about afterwards when I grew older and thought back on this, what kind of psychological damage was being done there?
Yeah. Well,
and as you said before, who thinks these things up?
The female teacher wearing a ring on her finger.
Yeah.
And what would she do?
During the wintertime, she'd heat it up on the radiator and then it would burn your wrist. She'd put the ring against your wrist and she'd turn up your wrist.
My God.
Yeah.
Well, that's painful for a start. Then.
Oh, that's very, yeah.
You were knocked down by a teacher. You were what, 8 or 9?
I was 8 or 9 years old. I think it was in fifth class. And this particular teacher was well known as a bully, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And I was being asked questions about mathematics, and I was not good at mathematics, still not great at it, and I always attributed to the kind of punishment I got. But on this particular day, the teacher got really angry with me because I just wasn't getting it or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And he whacked me, literally now whacked me across the head. And I was hit so hard that I fell back on the floor. I was flat out on the floor and I was moving on the floor. And as I said, the only thing that stopped my slide along the floor was the skirting board of the wall.
A grown adult assaulting an 8-year-old child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such
force. 8 or 9 years old. With such force that I slid along the ground and what stopped me was the skirting board on the wall. So I don't know what happened. I mean, we didn't normally mention an awful lot of this kind of stuff at home, because our parents would just say, well, what were you doing to deserve punishment? But on this particular occasion, I spoke about it at home. Okay. I might have been sent home early, I don't know what it was, but my father went ballistic. My father, now, he hit the roof.
Okay.
He couldn't get over this. So he went round to the school with me the next morning.
Good man.
And he tackled the teacher. And he told him in no uncertain terms, we could see him, he brought him outside and we could see him outside the window, and he grabbed him by the collar. And I can only assume what he said, but the assumption was from the animated conversation we could see outside that if you were to do that again, he would be back and he would handle the teacher in the same way as he had roughed me up.
What about the phrase you often hear, the nonsensical phrase, it didn't do me any harm?
Oh, yeah, but sure, look at, I mean, that we're thing hearing, of dressing those hear, boys up in hearing, a smock.
I tell you, we're hearing the exact opposite, as you know.
Absolutely. Because you don't know, I mean, in future years, I have no idea what kind of psychological harm that kind of thing could have done to those boys, really and truly. You know, for all the physical punishments that you would get, you know, you can or cannot get over, but that kind of psychological trauma, that doesn't go away.
Those children being paraded around and at the
parade around the whole every classroom in the school they were brought around to, every one of them, not just one or two, all of the classrooms,
to be laughed at as they were crying,
to be laughed at, humiliated, bawling, crying, dressed in a girl's smock.
Okay, Jerome. Thanks indeed. I'm going to move quickly, and I hope not rudely, because there's so many people. Bernard, good afternoon, Bernard. Bernard went to school in Dublin. It's 1962. What happened, Bernard?
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, no, I was dragged out of my class one day, and I was told to go into a certain classroom to see a certain brother. And as soon as I walked in the door, the class was empty. He just lay into me with a looked like a leg of a chair.
Yeah.
So he hit me, and I said, "What was that for?"
Yeah.
And he hit me again, and then he chased me around the room with the leg of the chair, and he was saying to me, "Who are you doing it with?" And I said, "Doing what with?"
Yeah.
And he hit me again. He said, "I want a name. Who are you doing it with?" And he kept following me around the room, bait me up. It seemed like, oh, I don't know, 5 or 6 minutes, but it seemed like an eternity. So eventually, I gave him some name off the top of my head. I don't know who it was.
What did he mean, Bernard? What was he saying?
Well, I think I kind of copped on afterwards that he was referring to boys having, you know, sexual relations with each other or whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And obviously, the guy before me got the same treatment. He gave him my name, and I was completely innocent. And I gave somebody else's name,
I'm sure,
it was completely innocent. And he got the same treatment. And it was so bad that I couldn't use my arms or legs for about a week afterwards.
And he flogged you with what did he say, the leg of a chair?
The leg of it looked like a leg. I wasn't too sure now, but it was a big stick anyway. But he didn't care where he hit me, arms, legs, head, whatever he could, lay a blow on me.
So, Bernard, that's something you see in the
concentration camps or something.
Yeah, like, give a name. We want a name. We'll break you. So,
and I didn't have any name for him because I wasn't involved in any of that kind of stuff. And to get out of the room, I had to give him some name. I'm sure the poor boy whose name I gave got the same treatment until he gave a name. So I think, I don't know how many people he went through, but I know that's, I'm only referring to the boy before me and the boy after me.
Yeah.
So I feel terrible for that boy. I don't even remember his name.
Yeah. Okay, Bernard, thanks indeed. Going to Brian. Brian.
Hello.
You were talking about the effects. Well, this is one effect about a particular, people regarded, and rightly so, as an incredible pastime, reading and writing poetry. What happened, Brian?
Well, I suppose I went through a reign of terror from the time I started school until I quit school at the age of 15.
Okay.
And from the junior infants, the teacher used to pull up our short trousers and slap us on the ties. So it was all punishment. You know, in fourth class, we would the brother would sit on a chair with armrests, and he would make you recite poetry, and if you got it wrong, he would lash out and hit you in the solar plexus. And you know,
what do you mean, punch you?
Punch you, yeah. Like you were standing
on the head.
No, in the solar plexus.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
In the abdomen.
Okay, you know? Okay.
Yeah. And I have vivid memories in sixth standard, then sixth class, as it was called. The teacher there would strike you with a cane every time you got a spelling wrong. And like my worst experience was getting 6 cane slaps on each hand, you know, and just no sense of learning or support. It was all about just punishment. And in secondary school, then the same school, same Christian Brothers, the punishment kept on, and a major big memory of in front of the whole school being called up. I think I was talking to somebody, mm-hmm. and the head brother there, the superior, gave me a slap across the face, and just total humiliation in front of the whole school. You know, and by the end of third year after doing my intercert, I just refused to go to school. And I remember in those years as well, I was getting abdominal pains and cramps, and I spent lots of time, now not in hospital, but outpatients. Yeah. And looking back at it now, I know it was psychosomatic, just because I just couldn't face school.
Well,
you know?
an adult punching you full force in the stomach.
Yeah, but all of that fear just, I just, my whole personality, I just changed into a little mouse, and I just couldn't do anything, couldn't engage with people. It was all just fear. And like, also the concept was that I was a dunce. I couldn't do anything. Yeah. And the inference was I wasn't going to pass the junior cert. And my parents were advised, you know, when I didn't go to school, to send me back to first year in the local technical college.
What?
And I went back to first year at 15. And I ended up, I was assisting the new lads with their lessons, because, you know, I just was able to manage it. And then the junior cert results came out several months later, and I had 2 honours, you know, to everybody's surprise. So I wasn't the big dunce that I was being made out to be, you know.
Of course you weren't.
And, but the one thing I will say, Joe, I got solace in joining a voluntary group. I'm a member of the Order of Malta.
Brilliant.
They were supportive. You know, they took you in, they gave you training.
Yeah.
And, like, to this day, I'm still a member 50-odd years later. You know, but
well done.
The Christian Brothers, to me, they ruined my education. But a big factor to the real disappointment of my parents in particular, because they were very religious. I lost my faith when I was 17. I just couldn't understand how Christian, inverted commas, brothers could actually treat people the way they were treating them. And just to this day, I still haven't regained any kind of faith. I have no concept of religion at all. And I just horrific in that sense, you know. But thankfully, I got into a career where I found education. And, you know, I'm retired now, but I finished up my career with a number of masters and a doctorate, you know. So I'm actually a doctor, you know.
You were being beaten, punched in the stomach consistently and persistently because you couldn't recite poetry.
Yeah, and that was canes and letters and rulers, and the gentleman before me, the leg of a chair was used, all of these implements, you know, and it was all just fear and beating you down.
Yeah.
And subsequently, you know, I remember reading a report as an adult about a child with dyslexia. And now, I've never been formally diagnosed with dyslexia, but reading that report just highlighted to me, yes, that was my issue when I was a child. I just couldn't comprehend the spellings, etc., you know. Mm-hmm. But it was, instead of education, it was fear.
Yeah. As someone said, Brian, thanks indeed. And someone said the other day, primary school in his day, the 50s, 60s, 70s and early 80s, was you would hear more crying than laughter. Thanks, Brian. Angela, another horrific. What were you Hello. Made? Who were you made punish, Angela?
I was made to slap my brother across the face because he missed a spelling or something. I was in a two-room school, and in each room there were three or four classes, and I was in high infants at the time, at a lower high infants, and he was just a year or so ahead of me.
Okay.
And he obviously missed a spelling or something. I don't quite recall exactly what it was. And the teacher dragged me out of my seat and up in front of where the class she was teaching were standing in front. The rest of us were sitting down. And she dragged me and she told me to slap him, and I wouldn't. God. So she took my hand and she made me repeatedly slap Tim across the face with my hand. Dreadful, like.
And his reaction?
Oh, well, I mean, he was desperately upset, but so was I.
Yeah, of course,
Even though I was only about four, I knew it wasn't right to slap anybody across the face. It was very humiliating. And to this day, like, I get flashbacks about it. You know, I think it's such an awful thing to do to a child,
yeah.
Or to make a child do to another child, you know?
Shocking.
So it was shocking altogether, yeah. But she must not have had her ruler or whatever handy that day. So she used my hand instead.
And your brother was older than you?
Yeah, my brother's just over a year older than me, so he was in a class above me. But we were in the same room, if you understand.
Yeah, of course, in two classrooms, one area maybe separated by a folding door or whatever.
Yeah. The next class, which was the master, he had the older children. I think it was from maybe fourth class up to sixth or seventh at the time. Yeah, we're in the other room. And we used to hear commotion coming through those doors plenty times because he was very fond of using the stick too.
Okay. Angela,
but that was normal, like, you know, that was normal at the time.
Angela,
but not
thanks.
Slapping across the face.
Oh, my God. Thanks, Angela. Kevin, penknife. What happened?
Hi, Joe. I'm 54 now, so this happened when I was about 9 or 10, around 1980.
Yeah.
I loved going to school. I'd leave at the crack of dawn to go to school and play soccer with the lads or whatever.
Yeah.
Loved it. On this particular occasion, it was around this maybe November time, I'd say, because the conquerors were out in the trees. And so I brought with me to school my little child's penknife, you know, the little penknife.
Yeah,
and we used to be dealing, you know, having fun with the conquerors and splitting them and all that kind of thing. And I was in the pitch beside the school, and me and my friend were playing splits. I don't know if you remember splits.
Oh, yeah, with a knife, and you throw it in the middle, is it?
You had to stretch.
You had to stretch. Yeah.
Exactly. And whoever couldn't stretch lost, you know, it was just
yeah.
But anyway, the head brother saw this and bellowed at the two of us to immediately go to his office.
Mm.
I mean, bellowed. We went in anyway. First of all, he put us both in the toilets, kneeling in the toilets in front of the urinal, as people were coming in and out and using the urinal, etc. Then he called me in to his office.
Yeah.
I think because I was the one who owned the little knife, and he literally surged for me, pushed me against the wall.
Mm.
His mouth was frothing. He was... His tongue was kind of sticking out of his mouth, and he had the penknife, and he put that to my throat. He held that penknife at my throat. I can still feel today the feel of the steel against my throat. And for all intents and purposes, I was convinced that I was going to be slashed. I'll never forget, his face was red with anger, bright red with anger. And there was spit coming out of his mouth. So this went on for, I don't know how long this went on for. I was absolutely traumatised, and he put me back into the bathroom, the toilet there with my friend, and we knelt there for, I can't remember, a few more hours maybe.
Mm.
And then we were told to go back into the class, and went back into the class and sat down as if nothing had happened. But I can still remember my heart beating 1,000 miles a second, you know, just so much.
Yeah.
And my heart was just complete and utter shock.
Well, that image, that image is now in
that
my
image,
head.
Yeah, I
holding you up against the wall with a penknife to your throat.
To your throat, yeah. And I can still, and the spit coming out of his mouth and the absolute anger. I don't know where the anger came from for some of these people. I just don't know where the anger came from. So that was it. I didn't tell my parents because, believe it or not, I felt I was in the wrong. I remember thinking to myself, well, I've obviously done something terrible. If this brother has done this, then it's my fault, obviously. So I never said a word.
It wasn't.
Basically.
Terrifying, terrifying. Kevin, thank you. Thank you, Kevin. And thank you, everybody. A break. Joe at RT.ie. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
My teacher in first class was a big man with huge biceps and legs like tree trunks. One day after lunch, this teacher had a little boy stand in front of the class. This particular boy was an orphan, a waif-like figure with curly dark hair and without a pick of fat on him. It was clear that this young boy was undernourished and dressed in rags. He had nobody to stand up for him. Part of this teacher's modus operandi was to chat to his cane prior to a beating. This installed greater psychological fear into his victims. So, with this little boy standing beside him, he started to talk to the cane, stating what he was going to do to him. The boy started to cry even before he was hit, and I could see his skinny little legs shake in fear. The teacher walloped this boy 6 on each hand. After the first 6, the boy was doubled up in pain and tucked his tiny hand under his opposite arm to quell the pain. The teacher had to wrestle his other hand from him and dragged him clear across the room to free his second hand for the next 6. I remember later in the afternoon seeing this boy and noticed red stains on his jumper, under his arms. This poor little thing had warts on each hand, and these warts opened up during his punishment.
I'm 47. Yes, only 47, and yet I still suffered corporal punishment. My primary school teacher for infants, seniors and first class beat us physically during our 3 years with her. It was usually a slap across the face. I was born left-handed, but she managed to beat that out of me along with others. My best friend, on her first day at school, so only 4 at the time, got the teacher's hand right across her face for using crayons instead of colouring pencils. I will never forget a little boy in the class. He was weak academically and he was beaten on a regular basis. He cried every day. He was tormented. He struggled socially for the rest of his life, no doubt as a consequence of his early school days.
Dear Joe, my husband, now in his 70s, attended a CBS primary school. He still talks about a day that traumatised the whole class. It was when he was in 4th or 5th class. Their regular teacher, a layman, was out, so the head teacher, a Christian brother, took over the class for the day. A young boy with special needs, who was nonverbal, sat at the back of the class. He would put a toy soldier on his nose and rock back and forth. The headmaster shouted at him a few times to stop rocking, and when he did not, the brother charged down and with the full force of an open hand, he slapped him in the face and head. The class was stunned into silence with fear and shock. This same boy was a quiet child, and the kids of the area always looked out for him. They would wait at the end of the street and walk this boy to and from school. My husband had a terrible experience in that school. The scars that these people have left are untold. Someone once said to me that Ireland is full of secrets. It is, and most of them are dark. And we wonder why Ireland has a drinking problem. I do believe trauma passes from generation to generation and we are still licking our wounds.
I attended a CBS from 1979 to 1984. The brothers were barbaric. When I was 12, every day for Irish, one brother would use a piece of leather horse harness on us, something I recognised from my granddad's farm. A few years ago, I had a flashback when visiting one particular college for an open day when my eldest daughter was checking out CAO options. Nearby, there was a type of Christian Brothers museum. The sight of the CBS copybooks with the CBS logo on the front cover and the words of our national anthem, Auron Navin, on the back cover immediately terrified me and transported me directly past suppressed thoughts to 1982 and the horrors of Wednesday morning's double class of Honours Irish. On Wednesday, we would come into school in terror. We had shoved those CBS copybooks down the backs of our trousers and legs, waiting for the beatings to start. In he would come, leather hidden in his cassock, instructing us to move all the desks to the side of the room. Then we were paraded around the middle of the room in a circle, reciting the 54 Honours Irish poems. Once you failed, and you inevitably failed, you were bent over a desk and hit and flailed at his full strength repeatedly on the backs of the legs and arse, while he muttered, "I have you until June, gentlemen," referring to the incoming corporal punishment laws. My mother and father were, and still are, very religious, so I could not and would not speak to them about it, for fear of breaking their hearts.
Corporal punishment was banned from 1982, but it wasn't criminalised until 1997, believe it or not. Andrew was in the Midlands. Andrew, good afternoon. You said the only Irish you learned in school was Tuor Dum de Láimh. Give me your
hand. That's correct. Yeah, that's correct, sure.
And the hand was to be given for beating.
For beating, for slapping. And Joe, from first class right up to sixth class, you know, there was head beatings on the desk. I was in the dunce's desk. I was just humiliated all through my national school, and I thought that was bad enough. Yeah. I mean, when your owner said yesterday, and I completely agree with him, to be able to grab the cast iron legs of the desk after the slappings with some bit of relief, you know. And I'd say if they even knew that, they'd have banned it.
But your hands would clench
onto the
try and get some coolness from the iron, yeah.
Yeah, just the coolness there and try and calm your hands. And I thought, you know, this is bad enough, but I'm in sixth class. It won't go on for much longer. And then I went into secondary school, and it just got worse. My first introduction to secondary school was a brand new science teacher who had everything in his head, knew everything, was passionate about his subject. I couldn't understand it. So to make me understand it, out came a meter stick. And that was a regular thing. And other lay teachers in secondary school would give you slappings as well because you weren't. Sometimes I'd go home and I just couldn't. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what homework I was to do. And I just my parents would think I'm up doing my homework. I'm just lying there thinking that tomorrow I'm just going to get a slapping. I'm going to get a caning tomorrow.
And you're lying there in fear, I presume.
In fear. And as if that wasn't bad enough, we were in a classroom. And the electricity had gone in the school. And so the bell for calling the children in and out to lunch breaks and, you know, levenses wasn't working. So we were all ushered out into the schoolyard. We're all milling around. It starts lashing rain. And three of us stood into a porch of a prefabricated cabin. And the principal of the school from another building saw us. And he started screaming out the window. The boys in there come out, and of course we said, well, they might know who we are, so we hid. And he left the window, and he came back out to the window ringing a manual bell and shouting at everybody to go back to their classrooms. And as they came back into the classrooms, we mingled with them and came in with them. And I sat down at my desk, and 5 minutes later, there was still no teacher in our classroom. And then he comes, the principal, and he asked that. He asked the three boys that were in the classroom to stand up.
Yeah.
And I was the first, right in front of him, standing in front of him. And he slapped me out of my desk and punched me to the floor and kicked me down through the classroom. And if that wasn't bad enough, kicking my back and my legs and my head, he stood me up and turned me around and put my arm behind my left arm behind my back, twisted it, put my hand up onto my shoulder, put his knee into my back and straightened my arm.
I presume your arm was damaged.
Damaged beyond repair. I still have an arm, thankfully, but every ligament, every muscle, everything in my arm was pulled out. The socket was straightened in my arm as well. And I was left there crying. The other boys, all I remember is the other boys were crying as well because they thought they were going to get the same thing.
Yeah.
And he took me over to the classroom and he brought me up to the staff room and I sat in there in agony for an hour while they decided what to do with me. Mm. And he brought me home and he just walked into the hallway and says, "You know, to my mam, I'm sorry, Mrs. X, Andrew, myself, I have had a little run-in. And I'm standing there with my arm like Popeye, only worse, from my wrist up to my shoulders, like 3-4 times the size it should have been.
Swollen.
And then a neighbour from across the road came over and said, "What's going on? Why did he bring him home?" I said, "They've had a little run-in." And she took one look at me. She said, "For God's sake, he needs to go to hospital immediately." And I spent weeks and weeks in hospital, and they couldn't do anything for me. They couldn't. I don't even think they could X-ray me. They couldn't plaster me. They couldn't do anything. It was swelling me so bad. And then after all that, then I had to go through electrical treatment, shock treatment, horrendously painful stuff for weeks and weeks, trying to reactivate the nerves, the muscles. And
how's your arm today?
I can't straighten it. Never after.
This is what, 50 years later?
Yeah, 15 years of age, or 14 years of age. Yeah. And then when I eventually had to go back to school, I was shunned. It was like, "Don't go near him, don't. Mm. And one brother in particular, nasty bit of work, turned around in front of all the class and says, "You don't exist. I'm not even going to waste my breath teaching you. So I don't know why you're in my classroom." And I never felt so demoralised again in my life. And a lay teacher, I'd love to mention his name, but I can't. He pulled me aside one day. He says, "I want to see you in my classroom after school." And he went down and he says, "I'm here to teach you maths." And I passed maths in the junior cert, and I ran out of school after that. But the psychological, I'm listening to you.
And the physical. And horrendous. And the physical, which you were still enjoying.
And like, it did knock. I had no confidence for years and years and years. Yeah. But I fought it, Joe, and I have confidence now. And I'm fairly successful in what I do.
Brilliant.
And, and I have a happy life now. But, it took years of it. I have a very strong wife, and she's taught me how to deal with it. But I was so upset listening to your show there during the weekend.
People will be upset listening to your horror that you went through, and I'm sorry.
I can't congratulate you enough for what you're doing, giving people like myself a voice that for years we weren't worthy of it. So many people out there that have gone through this. And worse, I know, Joe, I know there's a hell of a lot worse went on.
But that, it matters whether other people are worse or different. Every story is different. Every story is painful. Every story is about adults assaulting children. In the confines of what's supposed to be a state environment of safety and protection and learning and growing and developing.
And people that were in a position of what we taught was trust, that the nation trusted these people.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, too much.
Well, let it be said and let it be heard. Andrew, thanks indeed. David, like so many people, David's in the Midlands. David, like so many people, you were punished because you were left-handed.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Yeah.
Well, my complaint is minimal compared with Andrew's.
Yeah,
there.
don't. Yeah.
But, When I went to school first at the age of 5, I was left-handed. I could write quite well when I went to school.
Okay.
But when the teacher saw me taking up a pen in my left hand, she got a rope and tied it around my left wrist and tied my hand behind my back. And that is the way we stayed until school was over.
Yeah.
And that happened to every child that was left-handed. Now, even out in the playground, your hand was tied behind your back. And the teacher would look out the window, and if anybody loosened the rope to do a bit of play football or play ball, some description, she would lash out at them. She'd come out into the playground and beat us with this seasoned ash rod. And as a result today, Joe, I have very, very poor handwriting and I am ambidextrous.
Stay with us, David. Listen to Paul and Paul to David. Paul, left-handed. You're 43 now. What happened?
Hi, Joe. Thanks for listening. I've been listening over the last week or so, some horrific stories. I suppose it's kind of reignited my memory of when I started school first. So I turned 4 on the 3rd of August, and then I started school in the September. And in the National Primary School, the junior infants teacher was a nun.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if I was writing or colouring in or whatever, but I naturally went with my left hand, and she noticed, and she told me to stop using my left hand. And this kind of progressed over a certain period of time, but it kind of got to a point where she used to scream at me and tell me that my left hand was the hand of the devil, and made me sit in my left hand. It kind of snowballed to the effect that she used to shout at me in front of the class, walk around and kind of target me and hit me in the back of the head and slap me, to the extreme that I was dragged out of the class several times by my jumper and then eventually by my hair as a 4-year-old child. And I suppose the stories this week have kind of reignited those memories.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always stuck with me, being told that my left hand was evil and the hand of the devil. And still to this day, as a 43-year-old man, as a businessman, as a business owner, I still sit in my left hand, when I'm having dinner, when I'm reading something, when I'm at my desk, when I'm having a cup of tea. All through my childhood, my teenage years, I would sit in my left hand and have my dinner. Now, my writing on my right hand has been atrocious all my life. I'm completely self-conscious of it. I don't take manual notes in meetings. I do everything on the laptop.
Yeah.
My signature is awful. And it was just kind of, it pricked my ears really when I was listening to other people, particularly this is the early 80s, you know, and I suppose it was just, it's just something that stuck with me all my life.
And without, who spotted that you were, without knowing, sitting on your left hand as an adult?
Say that again, sorry?
So who spotted this? You said you When you said you still sit on your left hand.
Yeah, it's, you know, like before the days of mobile phones, I think you would read the cereal box as a child at breakfast, you know. And, you know, vivid memories of sitting on my left hand in school when I was writing, going into my teenage years, even if I'm out for a meal with my wife now, if I'm at my desk. It's something I do myself until I realise I'm doing it. And I stop myself. It's just a built-in habit now, you know.
Okay, Paul, thanks indeed. And indeed, David, both being punished for, well, there was no justification for any of the punishment that's gone on. But both of you being punished because you were left-handed. Joe with RT.ie, 51551 is our text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Corporal punishment was the order of the day at my particular De La Salle school at both primary and second level. In national school, there was one particular teacher who prided himself on being the most feared by the children. On entering national school, I recall being told by other children, "Wait till you reach his class," and how right they were. He would roar at our class on a daily basis, and then the cane would come out for the customary beatings. We were absolutely terrified by him. Like many of your stories, he tended to pick on some of the quieter or less academic children, or slower children, as they were cruelly called back then. Sometimes he would be all smiles, but then suddenly turn on you for no reason. He was very, very scary. I remember one occasion I got all my homework right. I thought, no punishment today, thank God. He turned to me and said, "Did I think I was very smart getting all my homework right?" He then meted out the usual punishment. That always stuck in my mind afterwards. Secondary school was also full of a blend of good and bad teachers with more stories to tell. It really messed up my mind and totally undermined my confidence going into the outer world. I still hold many scars from this. I am now 73 and had given my experiences at school much thought in my later years. It is a difficult thing to say, but I often think that many of these abusers had their own stories to tell, but never told them. In many cases, they appeared to be very unhappy in themselves and probably in vocations that were not meant for them. That's not forgiving abuse, but goes some way for me personally in trying to understand the madness that was there.
I had a horrendously cruel headmaster who every day would beat children from as young as 4 years of age. He regularly used a wide, thick leather strap, which he kept up his sleeve. Sometimes he would ask the children of the two classes he taught to pass judgment on a child, deciding if a beating was to be carried out or not. Frequently, he would forcefully slap children across the face for a mispronounced word or a wrong maths answer with the leather. He broke a child's arm one day, having launched the wooden duster at him. Many poorer families were singled out for major beatings on a continuous basis. This man humiliated, belittled and beat these students on a daily basis. My younger brother said he was red from the tips of his fingers to the elbow with the beatings he got from this man. He also remembers this man pinning a yellow letter Y on his jumper and calling him a yellow belly to signify he was cowardly about something, who knows what. A few years ago, we had a reunion. The main topic of conversation was the abuse we had suffered at this man's hands. Many ex-students couldn't attend because of their horrendous experience in that primary school.
Mary, good afternoon. Yesterday we heard Mary about a boy who spoke when he shouldn't have been speaking, so to speak. A child in the classroom, and a tennis ball was put in his mouth as punishment. What happened to you when being forced to eat this orange?
Hi, Joe. Thanks for reading my email and that. It was 1965 and I was 5 years old, and I was in my second week in primary school, and I was just diagnosed with asthma. And in those days, you know, you were told, like my mother was told, that, oh, she needs plenty of vitamin C and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, and you know, the usual story, there was nothing known about vitamin C then except for you'd get it with oranges. And sure, as a small kid, you know, wasn't the way fruit was so readily available now. And I didn't like them. And, of course, I wouldn't eat them at home. And my poor mother, in her innocence, decided to ask my primary school teacher, would she encourage me to eat an orange at my lunch?
Yeah.
So the lunchtime came, and the teacher, she sat on this platform, and she called me up, and she had the orange peeled, and she had it cut in segments and all that. And she told me to take one and eat it. Of course, five-year-old said, no, I don't like them.
Yeah.
And she said, you'll eat them. And she just pulled me over and she started to put them in my mouth. She told me to open my mouth. So she started shoving these down my throat. And of course, I gagged and eventually just threw up all over the platform. And she had these, I'll never get it because this goes with the oranges. She had these red pointed nails. And which I thought on week one were very glamorous. And of course, week two, I realised that she used them to do other things with. And she gripped my arm and, you know, left marks there and everything and made me clean up the whole thing. And then, you know, had the other kids, some of them laughed, some of them cried. We were babies, you know. And first time away from our mothers, really. And so she did that and made me, you know, cleaned the whole thing up and was shouting at the other kids and hurt my arm. And from then on, she just picked on me. It was just my junior infant year was absolutely horrific. And the thing is, I loved school. And, but the whole year was horrible. It's horrible. And I've never touched an orange since, 59 years.
Oh,
I can't go into a supermarket where, you know, they do the freshly squeezed oranges. I avoid that aisle big time. I'd never told my mother. Yeah. My poor mother would have died, you know, if she knew that she put me through that. Didn't tell my father. My husband never knew this story of almost 40 years. And my son has never eaten an orange because they think I'm allergic to it. I've told everybody I'm allergic to oranges. So I don't have to eat them, or I don't have to have them around me or anything. And my husband, to be fair to him, has never had one in the house. So that was my story. I think it pales compared to some of them, but it just shows it's abuse in tiny ways, you know, that can, you know, it's taken me up to 65 years that I still shudder, and I never wear bright red nail polish.
Psychological abuse. Every story stands in its own swamp of horror. Mary, thanks indeed. Patrick, I know you finished in your notes saying in secondary school, your sister had a teacher that hit her such a box on her ear that she was tormented with it until the day she died. But you begin your story. You used to deliver papers here in Moorhampton Road in Dublin, was knocked down out of school for a year. And what happened when you went back to school, Patrick?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, can you?
Yeah. While I was... Sorry, I'll turn the radio down.
All right, okay. No worries.
Yeah, I was seriously injured and I missed the year. Can you hear me? Yes.
Yep, yep.
I was seriously injured and missed the year out of school.
Yeah.
While I was away, a new teacher came to our school and we believed he was an ex-Christian brother because he brought a big leather strap with him.
Okay.
Now, my brother was a year ahead of me in sixth class due to leave the school, and just before he did, he stole the leather strap and threw it in the local river to great applause. However, when I returned to the school, this teacher spotted who I was and he gave me a number of questions on mathematics that I hadn't covered, many, many, I think 35 or 40. And for every one I got wrong, he walloped me on both hands till I was bruised and bleeding, down on my knees. I ran screaming into the headmaster of a small school, showed him, and the headmaster said, it's nothing to do with me.
You showed the head teacher your bloodied hands.
So that was my little story. And I also said that my sister was punched on the ear in infant school.
Yeah.
And to the day she died, she suffered very badly with that ear. So that's my little story. Thanks, Joe.
A little story and big consequences, Patrick, but no story is little. Thanks indeed. Louise, good afternoon, Louise. I know you...
Hi, Joe.
How are you?
I've been listening to your show all the week.
Yeah.
It was 1954. Okay. I was 11 in primary school.
Right.
I was in fifth class, and it was run by nuns.
Okay.
That's 70 years ago. I was beaten on the back of my head, and at the same time, my forehead bashed against the desk, and I counted. It was 10 times on one occasion. And I wasn't good at math, so I was afraid. And she'd roll up her sleeves and use her fist to punch my head. And she'd call me an old jellyfish. So one day I went home at the playtime.
Yeah.
And my mother was beating herself in the same school. So I was so worried. And she just gave me a note and told me to go home, back to the school. And... it just kept happening again.
And you know, and what,
one,
do you know what was in the note? Do you know what was in the note, Louise, that your mum wrote?
She just said, you are not to hit my daughter again. Anywhere. Not to mind on the head. Because I could see stars after it happened. And it was, I mean, against a hard desk as well on my forehead. I'm sure I was bashed a bit. And... So this girl in the class, she just lost it. And she threw the nun against the blackboard. And her veil was pulled off.
Mm.
And we were all so stunned. It was shocking. But she was... the nun never appeared again after that. She had been transferred. God knows to where, another school, you know. So the girl was not expelled or anything. But, I mean, after all those years, the memory still remains and I still get upset at the thought, you know, of what happened to me.
And so, the sight of the nun these mysterious women in school who were uniformed, and some of them had wimple hoods on them and various other. But when her veil fell off or was torn off, what you're saying? There was shock in the classroom at seeing her without a veil.
With her white, whatever the white thing that's left after, you know. And she was a tiny nun, but she had such a temper. And her fists were so hard on the back of my head. And I had a head full of ringlets. And she used to hold them up and bash me down, you know, with her fists. So I left primary school then with no confidence. But then, thankfully, when I went into secondary, my mother had put me in a different convent school, different nuns, and they were okay. Mm. You know, it was a long time ago.
But still, it's
there.
But
it still remains in your head.
With so many people.
Yeah.
So many people.
Yeah.
And I know you tell us you were recently widowed, and I'm sorry to hear that, and you were married for 57 years.
That's it, Joe, yes. Yeah. And I'm thankful for all the happy years and all my lovely family, only for them, you know. I wouldn't be here today.
Okay. Louise, thanks indeed, and take good care. Joe at rte.ie, 51551 is our text number, and 0818 715815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I was in fourth class in 1991, so not a million years ago. Children in our class suffered dreadful cruelty, humiliation, physical and emotional abuse through the hands of our male teacher. There were three boys in particular who had learning difficulties and who were bullied beyond belief in the presence of all the students in the class. The teacher would hang them up by the scruff of their collars on the coat hangers and beat them one by one across their calves with a hurley while their screams pierced the air. He would throw slitters full force at them and hit them on the face while they cried in pain. On one occasion, he put one of the boys in the attic over his desk. He would say, "Up with the rats, where you belong." While the child screamed, "Please, sir, no, sir, not where the rats are," this man would merely laugh. We all watched on in horror. There were children onlooking, and some would wet themselves while witnessing all this, including me. It was horrific, and no one believed that this could possibly be happening. We were a class full of petrified students. I think of them often, and some of us who still meet talk about it together to this day, how horrendously these boys were treated and what we witnessed.
I am 78 years old now and was subject to severe physical abuse in a De La Salle school back in the 1950s and 60s. Physical abuse was common in that school, unbridled brutality, accompanied by shaming, ridiculing and name-calling. My father died when I was 6 months old. My mother worked in England, so I was a sitting duck. An early encounter was being told by an irate religious brother, eyes bulging with anger, that he would smash my skull. For what? I don't know. I was about 6 years old. Not long after, I was taken out of class and brought to the headmaster, where I was subjected to a severe beating. I had no idea why. Physical abuse continued throughout my school days. I felt continuous fear. I had no protection, no place of safety.
John, and then Paula, and then Joseph. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You went away at 12 to be a Christian brother.
That's correct. And the only reason I did, when I think back on it, is because my brother had gone before me.
Yeah.
He was a year and 4 days older than me. And when he came home at the end of a term, like, he was treated like a king at home. So I said, I want to be a Christian brother too. But anyway, I did go. I was only 12 years of age. And it was a regime, really, to be quite honest. We were up at 6 o'clock in the morning. We used to stand outside our cubicle, cold water to wash ourselves, down to church for prayers, and then back up, do your bed, and then back down to school for the day. But you had to retire at 9 o'clock at night time. And we all slept in a dormitory with just a curtain across as our door. there were only timber door, timber cubicles, really. And lights were out at 9 o'clock at night time. Okay. And about a quarter past, 20 past nine, you would hear footsteps coming on the wooden floors outside your cubicles going down. And then you'd hear a curtain being pulled across, a couple of curtains even. And after about 5 minutes, you'd hear a boy's crying and saying, no, please stop, please stop, please stop. So they were potentially abusing, they were abusing potential Christian brothers. Hence, the Christian brothers probably thought that was the norm then. You follow me?
Yeah.
Yeah, and thankfully my curtain was never pulled because of the fact that my brother was there.
Yeah, okay.
And he was the top student, A's across the board.
Okay.
So and also I would have had somebody to go to talk to,
perhaps.
Or explain. So
a reveal.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, John.
Another.
Yes, please.
When I came back. I was born with a septum, a deformed septum. So
okay.
I was in Dr. Stevens Hospital for an operation. There, it's now the HSE headquarters.
Yeah.
And when I came home, my first day back in school after the operation, a Christian brother broke my nose with a box.
After an operation?
After my operation, yeah. He used to always box, and we'd know when he was going to box. So we would put up our arm to have to block him, but he would come up with the other, with the fist in the other hand as quick as lightning. And he did that to me one day and broke my nose back after the operation. But I can tell you, when I went home, if my mother went down to him, he never touched me again.
Well,
by the time she was finished with him.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, John. And to Paula. Paula, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you? Thanks for highlighting all of this. It is important.
And thank you. When you're talking about your brother, who's now 60.
Yeah, this goes back to, he would have been probably, I think, maybe fourth or fifth class, around about that age. I can't remember the exact circumstances, but what happened, or why, but what happened in class one day is my brother is adopted, and he's slightly dark-skinned.
Mm.
And the brother, for whatever reason, decided to bring him to the top of the class in front of everybody and paint his face with chalk to, in his words, make him white like everyone else. So, and I think while he didn't physically hurt him, I think what he actually did was probably worse. He struggled in school for a lot. And I actually taught my brother to read because he struggled so much in school.
Yeah.
And he spent a lot of his teens then in and out of various bits of trouble and what have you. And I think looking back, we would attribute it to treatment in school.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe, I know.
Yeah. You get to the edge of this Niagara of pain. I thought we got to after about 2 days, I thought we were near the edge of it. But after 2 days, we went over the edge and we're still falling with these horrific, horrific stories. Yeah. Paula, thanks.
The only hope these days is that we know better, so hopefully we do better.
Yeah, and more people stand up. Thanks, Paula, and kind regards to your brother. Very kind regards to your brother. That was John, Paula, and now Joseph. Joseph, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you?
Good. 19, we're back to 1978.
1978, Joe, I started primary school at 4 years of age.
Okay.
I came from an adoption, and every day I was brought up by a nun, and I was lashed with a bamboo or an ash plant, whatever they had.
Yeah.
As an example to the rest, that if you step out of the line, this is what's going to happen to you. I had that memory locked away in my head for a long time, Joe, and didn't dwell on it until I was at a wedding there a few years back, and a woman said it to me, that her daughter used to get sick every morning passing a specific spot in the road because she was going to school to watch me getting beaten. So I just kind of took it as part of the course, to be honest, about it, Joe, and we went on about our daily business, going to school and getting better and laughing about it or whatever we had to do to survive. Then we went on to a primary school, and that was like going from the frying pan to the fire. We went from the nuns to a Christian brothers. When I say we were a group together, Joe, and we trudged through this together. We're like soldiers in battle, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And we went in to be beaten daily by Christian Brothers, by lay people in this school, bar one teacher. I was a five. The rest of them were just relentless. You were happy to see somebody else getting beat up because it wasn't you who was getting beat up. It was like listening to a story of a guy in the battlefield seeing a guy getting killed and thanking God it wasn't him.
Yeah.
That's what it was like for us when we went in. And lucky enough, I was only the ones that got the fists. Some of the guys and some of my friends got sexually abused and stuff in the school as well.
Yeah.
We were made kneel down for hours upon end through class, one class to another, from 9:15 to 11:15 when the break was on parquet floors. If you twitched at all, you were in trouble.
Yeah.
Then decided to put a book under your knees to raise you up a bit, to make it more awkward. You were beaten with a woman with sovereign rings on her head. I could nearly get date marks on your head going home from school from sovereign rings, from beatings,
yeah.
Kids got. There was one Christian brother in particular, and he was sadistic. And there was one time where I was put outside of class, in third class, for giggling. Mm-hmm. And I was outside the door, and he saw me from his office, Joe. And it was like, to me at the time, it's in mid-80s, it felt like Darth Vader was coming down the corridor of the Death Star towards you, and the long black vestments on him. And he decided to hand out a bit of punishment to me, Joe, in the form of fists and kicks. And he slapped me from one wall to the other on the corridor. He caught me between the two ears and started bashing my head against the walls. I was so dizzy I went to the ground. He decided to put his foot on my throat. And I was gasping for air, and he decided to let me up to go back in and apologise to the teacher. I stood up, Joe, to walk back in the door. And he caught me by the hair and dragged me back across the room. Mm-hmm. And made me go to my hands and knees and apologise to the teacher for giggling. But he was then later accused and proof of sexual abuse in the school, and he was moved off to another part of the country entirely. And the Christian brother that took over from used to be is for using too much Tyler roll. He gave us he used to put the Tyler roll up on the locker as you walked out the door. If you had to go to the Tyler, you had to bring the Tyler roll with you.
Yeah.
And he gave us an instruction one day how to get away with using one sheet. He didn't use. We didn't need to use two or three sheets to go to the Tyler. And if you came back in and there was a couple of millimetres, centimetres gone off the roll, you got a beating for that. So, I'll tell you, we tried to launch an investigation, myself and a friend, with the help of a retired teacher, Joe.
Yeah.
And he was hidden away in the UK. And 5 years after he passed, we found out that he passed.
Yeah.
Just looking for some kind of justice.
Yeah.
Joe, and on a funny tale, I walked the streets of New York. I walked the streets of Sydney. Most of the major cities around the world. I've stood in rings for boxing. And about 5 years ago, I went down to the school to collect my daughter, who was doing an after-school thing down there. They have it repurposed as a youth centre, an after-school thing.
Okay.
And I walked in thinking, oh, geez, I must go in and have a look around while I'm waiting for her for the 5 minutes. I was stood to the ground, Joe, and froze in the hallway. I'm 6'3", Joe, and a big guy. I'm not afraid of nothing or no one. And I never missed a day of school in my life because I said, them bastards are not going to break us down. But I stood in that hallway, Joe, I was a terrified 8-year-old. And I'll never forget the feeling I had. The sweat ran down my neck, came out my fucking ears with the fear of him coming out of the room again, Joe.
You were back to being an 8-year-old.
Back to being 8 years old again, getting hopped off them walls and getting a foot down on my throat and he looking down at us. And I'm just glad, Joe, that there's a light coming on this. There was light for ages, Joe, but no one realizes the damage is done. There's a generation going around there, Joe, a generation and a half or two generations, whatever's still alive. And they talk about men coming back from war with post-traumatic stress. There's a generation and a half, Joe, going around this country tormented. I mean tormented with stress and suicidal tendencies. I don't think, Joe, I've ever had the capability of trusting anybody or letting anybody in again. And to meet me on the streets, you wouldn't know that, but that's the truth of it. Yeah.
So well communicated, Joseph, like so many. So vividly, and the brutality so clear and so unnecessary. Thank you, Joseph. Joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And why was you 5 years of age? Why were you locked in a darkened cupboard?
I went in back after lunch.
Yeah.
And I needed to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
And I was told I should have gone at lunchtime. And unfortunately, wet the floor. I was made clean the floor up in front of everyone, being called a dirty little girl. And then, to punish me further, she put me into this cupboard under the stairs that was pitch black. Mm-hmm. Now, to this day, I would not sleep in a dark room. If a light went out and it was pitch black, I would panic. And even on my wedding day, I wouldn't wear a veil over my face, because I hate anything close up to me. So she's left me terrified of the dark and been claustrophobic severely. Yeah. Now, I know she's dead, but she's still alive in my head sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Going on to Michael. And it's so strong. So strong, you're that image, that horrific, that horror. Michael, you were 9 years of age.
Yes, you are. I was nine, and I came across the only decent Christian brother that I ever met. He was a young man.
Yeah.
And he never laid a hand on any of us. But he entered us all for a type of stage, if you want to put it like that, where we had singing, dance, and Irish recitation and all that sort of thing. And I actually won the Irish recitation competition at the time. So I was brought back to the school, and the principal brought me around to all the different classes and whatever, and he said, this is a great honour for the school, and, you're a great man, and you're a great hero for the school and the whole lot.
Yeah.
And, of course, when you're 9 years of age, Joe, you think,
of course,
God, I'm about to win at something. I'm brilliant, you know?
Yeah.
So the following morning, he had us lined up to go up to the room, and we all lined up in twos, and the pencil case fell out of my bag. And I was picking it up in bits and pieces, and the principal came out of his office and he beckoned me, come with me, he said. And he brought me into the office and he gave me a beating that the likes of it I'll never forget was the butt end of a drumstick. Mm. And he said to me, you were a hero yesterday, he says. Today, he says, you're just a working class little effer. And that's what I got for doing the school proud today. Yeah. And I was nothing. It was something at the end of his boot tomorrow. You know?
Michael, I can hear the humiliation all those years ago echoing on sound. Thank you, Michael. On sound, James Feeney, research, Jim O'Donoghue, Martin, producer, Sean O'Gorman, series producer, Annette Egan. In 1982, the then Taoiseach of the day, Charles J. Haughey, used four words, grotesque, unbelievable, bizarre, unprecedented, to describe a horrific crime in this country. In 1982, corporal punishment was abolished in this country, we were told, and it became illegal then and a crime 15 years later. What we've heard over the last 10 years is goo-boo, is grotesque, is unbelievable, is bizarre, and is unprecedented. And I've no doubt we will be hearing more looking at our screens. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.